It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We talk about the sweeping domestic policy package now, the Inflation Reduction Act signed into law Tuesday, what it means for the IRS, what it means for your taxes. It provides roughly $80 billion in additional funding to the IRS over the decade, will allow the agency to hire up thousands of agents, revamp its technology. Join in on what's ahead for the agency, tax law changes, repercussions, closing the tax gap, recovering what Americans owe but don't pay. 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Samantha Jacoby is here, Senior Tax Legal Analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Samantha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, with this $80 billion, give or take there, what do you know, what information has surfaced on how this money will be used?
Yeah, so I think first, it's important to take a step back to look at what's happened to the IRS over the last decade or so. Its budget has been cut by 20% since 2010 after adjusting for inflation, and its staff has been cut by about a fifth, with even larger cuts in the enforcement function of the agency. And so the audit rates of all groups have declined, but especially for millionaires and the largest corporations. So what this bill does is it provides $80 billion over a long period of time, over 10 years, that'll help the IRS to rebuild after those devastating cuts. So it will allow the agency to hire and train new workers over the course of several years, as well as to invest in new technology. And I think just as an example why that's important, the agency's software, some of it dates back all the way to the 1960s. Mm-hmm. People who know how to program that software are all retiring. So it's really important that the agency be able to put in new technology, a new workforce that allows it to better combat tax evasion and to better serve people. Right now, only a few phone calls can even get answered. 7 out of 10 phone calls don't even get answered by the IRS. So in important ways, this will actually help a lot of people to be able to get their questions answered and better file their tax returns.
I was looking at the Congressional Budget Office cost estimate from earlier this month that says investing this money in the IRS over a decade, it'll collect $204 billion in gross revenue and $123 billion in net revenue. So that's, I would imagine, some serious return on investment if all goes as planned. How confident should we be in those types of estimates?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. There's actually pretty widespread agreement among budget estimators that each dollar that you invest in the IRS returns multiple dollars back to the federal government in revenue. And the CBO estimate is actually somewhat conservative. Treasury had estimated, based on a similar investment of $80 billion, that there would actually be a $400 billion net revenue because of differences in what they were counting. Essentially, Treasury was counting indirect effects of deterrence, whereas CBO didn't, things like that. Hmm. So I think I think people are pretty confident that there's a high return on investment from IRS enforcement investment, and that the CBO's estimate is more likely on the low end.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about how the Inflation Reduction Act that was signed into law Tuesday, how it might affect our country's economy and tax system, and what this overhaul of the IRS could mean. And we have Samantha Jacoby, who's a senior analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can weigh in on this, 800-642-1234. Samantha, you've talked about how the IRS has been so gutted and lack of a budget. How much could the workforce of tax agents grow from previous levels with this funding?
Yeah, so I think there's been some Anyway, yeah.
87,000? Would you like to start there?
So I'll just say that number is not the number of revenue agents that will be hired. There was a Treasury put out a document about a year or so ago that estimated that with this kind of investment, that's the number of employees, full-time equivalent employees, that they would hire over the course of the 10 years in aggregate. That's not just enforcement, right? There's also, I mentioned, a huge need for technology. That's going to be IT people, people building out the tech function, as well as people answering the phones, people processing the backlog of unprocessed returns. In addition to more enforcement employees, but it could also account for retiring employees. We don't have a specific number of, you know, the number of people that are going to be out auditing returns yet, but the Treasury Secretary this week did call for the IRS to put out a plan for how they're going to spend the money. So we'll likely see that in the coming months.
I was looking at that $25 billion would be allocated to support IRS operations like rent payments, printing, postage, mm-hmm. telecommunications. Is that like just the infrastructure of doing business as an agency?
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, operations is office support, utilities, like keeping the lights on, things like that. It supports all aspects of the agency's function.
Makes me wonder what happens after the $80 billion is exhausted in a decade. How do you maintain those resources you've added and fine-tuned?
Yeah, so there still would be annual appropriations, just like all agencies use every year. So the base funding of the agency would continue to be dependent on the annual appropriations process. The $80 billion is meant to sort of rebuild after the decade of cuts.
How much uncollected taxes is the IRS typically missing without the proper funding? What is this tax gap?
Yeah, so the tax gap refers to the amount of tax that is legally owed each year that is not paid on time and that the IRS does not collect through enforcement. So the estimate for the current tax gap is around $600 billion each year of taxes that people should be paying, but they're not. And, you know, a lot of it is intentional and a lot of it may be accidental, but in any case, it should be paid and isn't. And when taxes aren't paid, the people who are paying their taxes bear the brunt of it. And when you look at the revenue that is expected to be raised from the IRS investment, that $124 billion net revenue, that's over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And a $600 billion annual tax gap, right? So that's only plugging a small hole in that tax gap. There's still more to do.
Has the tax gap widened or stayed the same over the decades? What do you see?
Yeah, so the IRS only estimates the tax gap every few years, and the data that they use is always lagged by a few years because of data availability issues, statute of limitations and audits, stuff like that. So the last official tax gap estimate they did was from 2011 to 2013 data, and it was around $330 billion, and the estimate for today is based on growth of the economy and additional variables. So it's now $600 billion. And if you project outward, it's expected to grow even more. So it looks like it may be getting bigger. And when you account for the depleting budget of the IRS, it's reasonable to assume that those who are tax evaders are trying to take advantage of that even more.
We have senior tax legal analyst at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Samantha Jacoby is here with us on the Inflation Reduction Act, now law, what it means for the IRS and taxation in our country. Join in on IRS enforcement, the future of audits, the 15% corporate minimum tax, and more. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The head of the IRS says the funding in the Inflation Reduction Act marks a transformational moment for the agency. But what will the impact be when filling out your next tax return? It's $80 billion over a decade, much of that directed at tax enforcement. Join in on the future of the IRS, tax law changes, this funding infusion, 800-642-1234. Samantha Jacoby is a senior tax legal analyst at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, stays with us. Samantha, you know, we've heard Janet Yellen say that the new enforcement resources will focus on high-end non-compliance. But what about middle-class families, lower-class workers? Will they, too, be more likely to face an audit with a fully funded IRS?
So, you know, I think it's important to just to look at what we're talking about here. So most people... They get most of their income from wages or salaries, and you know their taxes are automatically withheld by their employers. On the other hand, you know, most high income people, they get a lot of their income from more opaque sources like capital gains or from owning businesses, and it's much harder to audit those kinds of returns. And so the people who tend to get their income from wages and salaries, their rates of compliance are very high, 99%. So the increased resources for IRS auditing will really help the IRS to look at those more complex returns, because they just can't, they don't have the resources to do it. But that's where the bulk of the tax gap really is. 28% of the tax gap is from those high income people. So for most people, the actual impact of increased resources for the IRS won't be increased audit chances. The Treasury Secretary has actually directed the IRS not to increase audit rates for people making under $400,000 a year compared to historical levels. But what it will let the IRS do is to increase audit rates for those sort of higher income, opaque income sources that really going to get at what the tax gap is hitting.
But who will watch how exactly the IRS will decide how to ramp up audits? I mean, who watches the IRS, because they have to ultimately decide who they're going to go after?
Yeah, so the IRS actually is subject to a great deal of oversight. There's an inspector general that conducts different audits of the IRS, as well as the GAO. Members of Congress can request the GAO do look at whether the IRS is complying with what they said they were going to do. Congress can also bring in the IRS commissioner to testify, and required they provide information to Congress. And I expect that will happen a great deal over the next few years.
Government Accountability Office there as well in the mix. Well, let's turn to a question here. Allison from La Crosse sent us an email, and Allison is wondering how the IRS plans to recruit additional workers given the current labor shortages in our economy.
Yeah, that's a good question. They've been sort of struggling with that as well during the pandemic. And I think they're with the funding, hopefully they'll just be able to find workers who can do the job. I think that's a good question, something to look toward. I think one point there is, because it's 10-year funding, a lot of the hiring will take place in future years. I referenced earlier a Treasury document that they project to hire thousands of workers over the next 10 years, but only about 5,000 were in the first year. So they'll ramp up the hiring over several years. It won't all happen at once.
At once. Well, let's talk about your bread and butter tax law here. So it created a 15% minimum tax for corporations. What will this do?
Yeah, so this tax, first, it's the biggest new or the biggest tax increase in the bill. It would raise around $220 billion over 10 years. And it only applies to some of the very biggest corporations, those that have $1 billion in profits each year. And what it does is it adds a new 15% minimum tax, sort of an alternative minimum tax on the income that these corporations report to shareholders. So they'll either pay the regular corporate tax or this 15% minimum tax, whichever is higher. And what it does is it ensures that these really, really big corporations, that they have to pay some minimum level of tax every year and that they can't reduce their tax to zero by claiming various tax breaks or shifting profits to overseas tax havens, which is something that we've seen from some of the biggest corporations in the past.
But if the current corporate tax rate is 21%, from due to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, how does this 15% work?
Yeah, so it's if you look at the 21% corporate tax that exists today, that still lets companies take lots of different tax breaks, deductions, credits. They can shift profits to tax havens, and so they're paying 21% of a smaller base, and this is a 15% tax on a wider base. So it's basically a smaller rate, broader base, and whichever one's greater, they pay.
Talking about the budgetary impacts of the Inflation Reduction Act with Samantha Jacoby, Senior Analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can join in 800-642-1234. Samantha, Democrats failed to close the carried interest loophole with this law. Can you explain what this loophole is?
Yeah, that was one of the disappointing things. So the carried interest loophole, it gets talked about a lot. It refers to the way private equity fund managers get paid. So we're talking about some of the richest people in the country, the people who run funds like Blackstone, KKR, Carlyle Group. The way they make their money is by buying and selling distressed companies. And instead of a salary, those fund managers get paid as a share of the fund's profits. And because of that, they're taxed at a 20% capital gains rate, which is a little around half the top rate on salaries. Mm-hmm. So it's a big, big tax break. And there's not really an economic rationale for that treatment. And both Republicans and Democrats have called to end the loophole.
I'm sorry to jump in here. Let's bring in a caller, Tom in Madison. Go ahead.
Good morning. I think the very first thing the IRS needs to do is to set up a secure IRS site for tax filing, reporting, and payments. And get out of the business with these unholy alliance partners of the software developers who we have to pay to file our taxes.
Tom, thank you for that. Go ahead, Samantha.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point and something that the IRS will be looking into whether they can do that in the coming years. The money that they are getting will help them to rebuild their technology to potentially allow for that to happen. And it is a big problem. There's a lot of evidence that paid preparers, they have higher inaccuracy rates and contribute to issues with tax filing. So that's a good point and something that the IRS will be looking into in the coming years.
So as this law takes hold, what will you be watching for in the coming years?
Well, I think certainly implementation of IRS funding is an important thing to look out for. The Treasury will also be implementing the corporate minimum tax by writing regulations for how companies are going to comply with it. I think another important thing is the Trump tax cuts from 2017 are going to be, some of them are expiring in a few years. And so I think there's more tax work to be done in the coming years, and that's what I'll be looking at.
Samantha, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a good day.
You too, Samantha Jacoby, Senior Tax Legal Analyst with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Ahead this hour, we'll look at how researchers are using remote-controlled watercraft to study fish populations in the Great Lakes. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update and a story from Wisconsin Life are next on the Ideas Network.